Somehow we'll find it. The balance between whom we wish to be and whom we need to be. But for now, we simply have to be satisfied with who we are. Brandon Sanderson.
Bending Not Breaking, the live action episodes. Episode 8, Legends. And welcome back to the final episode.
The last one.
The final episode of Bending Not Breaking, at least for now.
For now. Indeed.
As we talk about the last live action episode currently available for Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender.
Ding, 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 ding. You nailed it.
And
Legends.
We're going to do it as always. The last episode of a season has been Balance.
Balance.
And that's going to be our lens again today.
Big fan of Balance.
It's good to have balance.
I like being balanced. It's
yeah.
Nice.
Well hydrated.
Homeostasis.
Yeah.
That's not how you're supposed to pronounce that.
Homeostasis.
That's just what came out. You know?
Stasis?
Yeah. You know? It's the thing.
You know?
But that's what we're talking about.
Here's a fun conversation.
Balance.
About the way you're supposed to pronounce things. Recently, I've gotten in some hot water.
Hot water.
Because I like to say, like, what's your favorite genre of food?
Genre?
Mm-hmm. That's the word I use as opposed to like types of cuisine.
Yeah. What's your favorite cuisine?
Yeah. I say genre of food.
Okay.
And I've been told several times that that's not correct.
By whom?
People who don't like the fact that I say
genre
of food. People I work with. And I say, hey, did you understand what I meant? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, language. That's the whole point of communicating. And genre is typically used to define styles of art.
Yeah.
And so the argument has been like, it's not art. And I'm like, it's called the culinary arts, my friends.
Well, I think of genre as like typing too, because like, what kind of genre of game is that? Is that a cooperative game? Is that a like, there's lots of different types of games.
Yeah.
And so genres, I think a genre of book.
Genre of book, genre of movie, genre of food, because food is an art and it's a style of food.
Yeah. I can get behind it.
Yep. Thanks. We're starting a new wave. We're making fetch happen.
So what is your favorite
genre of food? Seafood.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah, for some reason I was thinking like country, like what, like nationality.
Like what nationality. Like, yeah, okay, and that was the other argument is like, well, Italian food versus like, you know, you have Italian horror movies,
like
you have American like horror movies, you have German
genre.
Horror movies, like,
yeah.
You're now getting into subgenres.
Subtypes, yeah.
And so, you know, seafood. Yeah, I love
all seafood.
I like a lot of seafood.
Yeah.
Lobster rolls from Maine.
So good.
Sushi.
Garlic butter. Lobster. What's not to like?
Scallops.
Like scallops.
But I also like Cajun shrimp styling. I also like, I had this wonderful, at a restaurant that you work at.
Yeah.
This black Campanelli, with shrimp, which was lovely.
Ooh. Yeah, the thing that I've seen recently that I want to try making at home is a shrimp carpaccio. So they stack a bunch of shrimp in this tube and then freeze it and then thinly slice it.
I like it.
And then they like take a torch to it so it's lightly cooked, and then they drizzle it in like ponzu sauce and like all of these oils.
So do you like blend the shrimp?
No. It's like whole
shrimp.
It's
like smushed.
Yeah. Not even smushed. Like it's just very thinly. Anyway, it is a thin bed of shrimp.
I like it.
And it looks very tasty. So
there was once a restaurant I went to that would serve fried oysters on carpaccio.
Ugh, yeah.
And they have stopped doing it.
It's tragic.
And so I have written several letters. Please. Oysters are too expensive. I'll pay it.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I'll pay for.
Yeah. I think we just need to learn how to master that at home.
No.
I want them to make it for me.
There's a chef at this restaurant named Jesse. And Jesse, if you're listening, fried oysters carpaccio needs to get back on the menu ASAP. But your black but your black Campanelle with shrimp was also good.
What are the odds that this person's listening and is like going to respond like, oh, all of these letters that I've been getting are from this guy.
Every listener, here's what I need you to do. Join our Patreon and we will give out the name of the restaurant and their address. And you can write a kind and loving letter to the chef named Jesse to politely ask them to bring back fried oysters on top of their carpaccio.
Oh my God. Oh, that's too good. That would be funny. Even if you got like four, that'd be really funny.
I'm looking for 12.
Yeah.
I need Jesse to have 12 letters.
Yeah. All right. You heard it, folks. The best reason to join the Patreon is to support Sunshine in getting fried oysters on his carpaccio.
They do it the best. It's a compliment, really, yeah. To Jesse.
Yeah.
That's why I need it back.
Yeah. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Because of balance, I currently have zero fried oysters in my life. And for my life to be balanced, yeah. I need more fried oysters.
Oh, man. Wow, that took a turn. Here we are.
The very last episode.
Yeah.
Speaking of fish.
Yeah. Speaking of giant fish that we need to fry, how about we get you to remind us what's happening in the episode?
All right, we'll do. You ready?
On your mark. Get set. Go.
There's a whole lot of fighting, and Zuko has a plan to get into the Northern Water Tribe, and what good is relying on the past when it stops us from having a future? In Sokka, you got to keep Yue safe. Fails. Zhao knows the spirit of the ocean and the spirit moon. Momo almost dies. That's kind of sad, I guess. And then Zuko and Katara fight. Zhao kills the moon spirit, and then we get an angler fish. Then he destroys everything. And then Katara convinces him to be normal. And then they go back to their normal life after taking Omashu. The Fire Nation gets Omashu.
Ding! Well done. Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
That was, he did it.
A whole lot of fighting.
Yeah, they fight. They fight. They fight.
I don't know what you want me to tell you. They very slowly fight.
Yeah, it's true.
Here's a question that I have.
Answer.
This is me being nitpicky, and I recognize it as me being nitpicky, and it's not a real critique I have with the show.
Cool.
Why did people on the boats need torches to light the fireballs?
I didn't see that. They were holding torches.
Yeah, they were lighting.
Maybe they're not all firemen.
They were lighting you know what? That's actually a really good answer. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Not everyone in the Fire Nation is a firebender.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not all firebenders. And that's maybe, that's
maybe
a good
they had
answer.
The firebenders that is a at different
I'll,
stations.
I'll take that answer. But I saw it and I went, huh? You would think.
One would think.
But that's actually a good point. Do we ever witness people in the Fire Nation who are a part of the military not having the ability to firebend?
Well, the presumption is that they can bend. So it's one of those things where, like, usually when that's pointed out, it's highlighted for a reason versus it being, like, a behind the scenes, like, oh, but yeah, they just couldn't bend. And it's not, it's just because we never saw
them.
So
they just light the, you know, the one firebender goes and lights all the torches so that they can all wield fire for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Turns out that's a pretty good answer.
Hey, balance.
Realizing that the world's not all firebenders and we need to have non-benders in our militaries in order to be successful.
So there's an argument when it comes to balance around Star Wars. I'm going to pivot real quick, but I promise it has
pivot.
A point.
Pivot.
But it has a point.
Pivot.
Where they'll say that there has to be Sith and Jedi for balance.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And the reality is balance is in the Force when there's peace everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it's not so much that you have to have evil.
Yeah.
It's just you don't have to have, like, an exceptional positive light when there's no negative light that is also there. Like, people can just exist in peace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, like, constant war in the world of Avatar.
Yeah. One might say that that's balance.
Is you could say, like, well, you can't have good without bad. But the reality is, like, you can just have
peace. Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily
mean... Well, it's the
mean...
whole premise of, like, it's, you know, Rava and Vatu.
Yeah.
Is another, like, Vatu is not the embodiment of evil. Vatu is the embodiment of chaos. And I think the way that it is, you know, told is that, like, this is the worst thing that could ever happen to the world. And it's clearly not good because we're attached to Rava, we're attached to Korra, we're attached to Aang, we're attached to the story of the Avatar. And we see that what happens when chaos unfolds is that it's not good because those are the things that we like. But it's the question, I think, around, like, just because I think that oftentimes villains have a really good argument of, like, that's a really good, like, logical argument, but I still don't agree with it. And this is one of those times where it's like, no, you need the bad in order to balance the good. Like, no, I see where you're coming from because I'm talking about balance, but that's not the kind of balance that we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't need bad to exist just so that there's bad in the world.
Correct.
And
it goes to me, reminds me of this premise of, like, in, you know, therapeutic spaces around numbing, right? Where you cannot numb the dark without numbing the light, right?
Correct.
And so in order to feel the good things really well, you kind of need to also experience the not so good things.
You have to have an awareness of what that means and feels
like.
But
in order to experience good things, you do not need to have a traumatic past, right?
Correct.
And so there's this, like, it's not because of your trauma and because of your, like, these bad things that you are now able to have an incredibly fulfilling, more amazing life. It just means that you can't selectively numb. It's not like, there's a lot of arguments around, like, creating virtue out of bad things. Like, you are better because of your bad experiences.
Like, entrance into a fraternity.
What doesn't hurt you makes you stronger.
Right.
And that's, no.
We're going to intentionally put you through bad stuff so that you can fight through it and learn to persevere.
And that's not how that works. And so it's one of those things where, like, I think balance, this is we've never talked about this before when it comes to the balance. I think this is neat. Balance being used as a way to justify not so good things in the name of balance. When in actuality, that's not what we're looking for. So that's neat. I think that's a good point. It's a good question to raise. I wish I had a more articulate answer.
You have this war taking place and, you know, their kids die.
Yep.
Kids die in this war.
We see it. We see it happen.
We see lots of people die. And we, I think, assumed when this happens in the Amid series, we're like, well, that person just fell into a frigid.
Yeah.
Water, but yeah. We just saw Zuko swim and use his fire breath, so, like,
people can survive.
Maybe technically they can survive.
All those non-benders that are holding torches, not so much.
They're done.
Yeah.
Their torches have gone out.
Boom.
They're gone.
Voted off the island.
But this idea of, like, all right, so, like, what does balance look like in this time of war, especially when you can only control the things that you can control?
Yeah.
And so, like, I can't control Ozai, the Fire Nation, and Zhao. And so, like, how do I respond? And is a response of, like, sending 12-year-olds to go fight a good one? No. But, like, but we talked about, you know, when you get to this point of feeling like you don't have any other options, and the presumption is they have to be there. And so it's tough to find balance in these moments without just making it stop.
Yeah. Well, and I think often, too, something that we're guilty of is saying that we need a more balanced approach, but balanced for whom, right? Like, who feels balance in this scenario, right? Is it you, and that's what you need in order to feel balanced, or is this leading to a more balanced outcome, right? And so, like, what's balance for who, for when, for, like, who, like, you know what I mean? Like, on what scale?
Well, even when you get this idea of balance for, like, retaliation purposes, like, let's talk, you know,
sure,
a little bit about, like, Israel's response to the claims of terrorists attacking them has been to decimate entire populations of people.
Yeah, the idea of a, quote, proportional response.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
So, like, yeah. But they're using balance as this argument, right?
That's such a good point. Yeah.
of this is just because of this thing they did in October. And the reality is, nope, you're punishing a lot of people who had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And you're using it as an excuse to commit genocide.
Yeah.
And so we got to make sure balance is not getting claimed for those types of things.
Hear, hear. Yeah. And like, and I think that that's, you know, the argument that Sozin originally embarks with is that we are going to bring peace to the world through our leadership and by spreading Fire Nation, you know, ideals, because we're so good, we're going to bring that to the rest of the world.
It's a pretty big red flag in every media that we've witnessed, Star Wars, Avatar,
yep.
whatever you want to point out. When someone says, I have to bring peace, and I'm going to do that through violence.
Yep.
It's a pretty big red flag.
Yeah. Sure is.
So, you know, America, we're going to bring peace through violence.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, that should make some warning signs go off, because that doesn't feel like a balanced approach.
Well, and again, it comes down to this, you know, we've talked about this many times before, but when do the means justify the ends? And are your means a method of achieving your ends? And is the end worth it, right? If the end is peace and Fire Nation's in charge of everything, then you're gonna take everything to like get rid of peace until you get to that point, right? Like, it's just counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense with your argument. And so, like, it's a weird way to say this is the end goal and it doesn't matter how we get there. The only thing that matters is that we get there. And I think that's trash. like how we get there is just as important as getting there.
You know, if you're talking about an afterlife, right?
Exactly.
Yep. What's right? the point of living if we're going to harm people for the purpose of getting, you know, eternal life or whatever it might be?
Eternal life.
So,
yeah.
Big moments in the show about balance that you want to talk about. Biggest one, the imbalance that happens from Zhao killing the moon spirit.
I mean, absolutely. Right.
Wouldn't kill the ocean spirit. I'm not a monster.
I thought that was a great line.
Yeah. No. I will say, I think this is probably probably my favorite episode out of the series is probably this last one.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get behind that. Yeah. I think it was episode 3 in Omashu that I really liked, because it blended like 3 or 4 storylines together that I thought was done really well. But I do think holistically this is a really solid episode. It's a
better episode. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I was thinking about this with Zhao, right? It's this idea of, I'm gonna completely imbalance the world, right? And this idea of, I'm not gonna murder a bunch of people. I'm just gonna take away their entire race's ability, right? Like, ability to do anything.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And, you know, I think when you're, it's interesting because Zhao is not doing this to impress Ozai. He is doing this thinking that he is going to oust Ozai because he's better, right? There's this line towards the end where he's like, not only this, but I will have gotten rid of an entire race's ability, and then I will be Fire Lord. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa.
In what world?
I've seen
you fight, my guy.
It was way more compelling when this was a way to
get in good graces.
Get in good graces with Ozai, because, Iroh points it out at the beginning of the episode. He's like, no offense, but I would not have put you in charge of such a prominent mission, right? And he's like, you're right, I haven't won, but I also haven't lost. And he goes from that to, I'm going to be the next Fire Lord. And there's an element of, like, that seemed a little, like, unhinged to me. Where prior to this, this felt very calculated, very, like, I'm doing it for the wrong reasons, but I'm doing this with an end goal in mind. And then it jumped to, that's a stretch.
Him chasing a promotion versus him wanting to be Fire Lord is
big.
Is a bigger move, but he's also a dumb.
It's true.
So, like,
it's true. But Okay, so when your idol is Ozai and the Fire Lords who have already committed a mass genocide of an entire nation, that's another one-liner that, like, would you even know what that means to Aang? And Aang's like, yep.
Yeah,
I know exactly what that would be.
Pretty good idea, guy.
I'm like, whoa, tap there, buddy. But yeah, I thought, again, like, from a comedic standpoint, joking about genocide, I thought that line was interesting. Anyway, I digress. The idea of when your history and the people you're basing your actions on and the things that are valued as good is eliminating an entire race, Zhao doing this seems very in line with, like, no, this is well within reason. This makes sense. And the idea of Iroh being like, you're going to throw the world out of balance. And he's like, so? This is what's normal for us. And so how do you, what is the method with which we would have preferred Zhao see the world through a balanced lens, right? And can we blame him for jumping to this conclusion given his leadership?
Well, again, so for anything, the goal is peace. Like, you know, you asked what's the goal.
Yeah.
What's the end goal? Zhao's goal, based off of his limited purview, is as high up as I can go in this military, in this space. That's the goal.
Yeah, power.
Iroh's goal is ultimately, to the best of our knowledge, like, world peace.
Yeah.
And now, where it maybe wasn't that before Lu Ten's passing, but, like, world peace. And so it's the lens and intent that which you go through life that allows you to do that. If your goal is world peace, then you should try to understand the world around you. Yeah. Right? That cornerstone goal is really going to be purpose. I think asking the question for any individual is, what do I really want to get out of this, is important. We, you know, we teach, I teach a training called Crucial Accountability.
So good.
One of my favorites. And one of the main questions that you ask when you're rumbling with, like, engaging in the conflict to talk about whatever the crucial conversation is what do you want to get out of this? And what do you hope the other person gets out of this? And what are your goals for this situation?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times that shifts. You know, I tell a story in that training. I got a call a few years back about from a camp that I worked at with someone who was really upset with our camp because we positioned ourselves as a canoeing camp.
Mm.
And he was mad that his child did not get to canoe for 8 hours.
Okay.
I'm sitting there on my end going,
that would be boring.
Your child would come back with a massive sunburn.
Yeah.
We absolutely do not advertise ourselves. Like, we have canoes on our website, but that's because canoeing is available.
It's an activity.
It's an activity we do, but it is not. All we are day. Not a canoeing camp.
Yeah.
Like, and we've never said that we are. So there's a way for me to engage with that of, I want to be right.
Yeah.
Is going to very much direct what that conversation is going to look like. It's going to be me claiming.
Yeah.
That
did you look on the website?
You're an idiot.
Did you explore this? Did you do that? Like, problem solving. Like, where did you look? I want to change. Like,
versus, yeah, I want this parent to have a really good understanding of our camp and have good and have realistic expectations about the care that we're able to provide. I want their child to have a really excellent experience where they grow and learn and make connections with other people. And I want to be trusted by this parent to know that we're going to take care of their child. That dramatically shifts the way that I approach that conversation.
Oh, so much.
And so just by asking some of those questions, like, what are you genuinely hoping to get out of this and why?
Yeah.
And what are you hoping other people get out of it and why, is a question I think helps bring that balanced take to it. And it allows you to get it right as opposed to just be right. And well, so I think that in any space for Zhao, he may genuinely want to do that thing. And so he's going to engage in the world that way.
Yeah.
So part of that is you have to ask yourself, but why? Like, what do you want to be ruler of?
Yeah.
Do you want to be a ruler of a world where, like, no one's enjoying themselves ever?
Yeah.
Why? Like, what's the purpose? And so I think there's more questions to ask there about what do you really want and why, and that is going to bring perspective and hopefully an awareness of the routes you can take to get to that point.
Well, and I think anytime, like speaking of balance, right? We are emotional creatures who think, and a lot of times I think people think that we are thinking creatures who feel, and we're not. We are emotional creatures who think. And our emotions guide so much of what we do.
It's the initial response that your body has to anything.
Yes.
Is a feeling.
Is a feeling, right? And we tell ourselves stories about those feelings and we come to drastically wrong conclusions. But that I digress. I think the thing about it is in any argument, oftentimes asking that question is, what do I really want from this conversation? Is going to change the way you show up in that conversation. Because so many times I have been, like, I have started to respond with, like, a, nope, I'm pretty sure it's this. And being like, that is not the point. Like, what do I really want? I want to understand, like, why this person's mad. Or I want them to feel better. Mm-hmm. And, like, pointing out why I'm right is very rarely going to do that. Like, and it's just one of those things where, like, even if I am right, that's not what matters to me. Like, I think it matters to me in that moment when I'm about to respond. But when I really ask myself, that's not what I want. I want to not feel the way that I just felt when they responded to me that way. And so I'm like, okay, I need to figure out why they responded to me that way instead of pointing out why they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, it takes a lot of space to be able to do that. And I think being able to process and like be aware of that is really difficult to cultivate. So it takes time. It
takes time and effort. And it's one of those things, like, kids are terrible at it, right?
Kids are very bad.
I had a conversation yesterday with two kids. They're a liar. I'm not a liar. You're a liar. I'm not a liar. You're a liar. It's tough to get them out of that cycle. And it's also even tough to be like, why is it important to you that I know that they lied about this game?
Yep.
And it's because they're doing things wrong and I want you to be aware of it. And like, cool, but are we just playing Duck Duck Goose? Like, and so like you all are, you know, in kids, because to your point, kids are feeling first, right?
Oh,
like
that's, yeah. And they don't know,
and they don't know how to articulate the feelings they're feeling. Yeah. And so typically when we engage that way, we escalate things as opposed to, again, taking that time. And so mm-hmm. whether it is, you know, Iroh trying to find his way in the world or Zuko trying to understand if I should, you know, I got to go get the Avatar when he's in a giant fish.
Yep.
And Iroh's like, you kind of want to pause everything and be like, all right, let's pause. Let's stop time.
Yeah.
Why is it important to you to find the Avatar or go get the Avatar right now? And like, yeah. All right, all the dad stuff. Great. Do you have to be living to do that?
Yeah, let's talk about
Zuko. So step one.
Survive.
Let's survive this giant spirit fish that is killing Fire Nation people at this time.
Yeah. Like Aang or Zuko in therapy. Tell me why you want to find the Avatar.
help me understand the purpose behind it. But to your point, that's really tough to do in the moment a lot of times. And it's
so
really
hard.
And it takes a lot of humility and willingness to kind of rumble with stuff when asking that question. Because so often we want to be right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know. So I think when we're talking about how do we find balance in those types of moments, that's how we get after it.
Do you think that Ozai would have been happy with Zhao taking out the moon spirit?
I don't know.
In either version, whether it's the...
Yeah, I don't... Maybe. I think that Ozai lacks humility. I think Ozai lacks an understanding. Just the want to commit the genocide that he's trying to commit.
Yeah.
Shows a lack of foresight in what makes the world a good place.
Yeah.
And so maybe he still might be like, but the spirits are now mad at me and so I have to kill you for that, right? Like, yeah. I could see him having that response to Zhao.
I don't think he would have done it. I think that he would have been glad to use Zhao as a scapegoat and have it be done, but like him still be able to push it off on Zhao.
Right.
Like, that's what, like, and so there's this element of, like, using pawns. And I think that's what's done really well. Again, I really like the certain choices around storytelling here where they were able to target and take out Omashu during this fight, enabling, like, it, this was the whole, this was a diversion. And I think that ultimately that was, that's good storytelling, that using this, this entire thing in a, what he perceives to be a war tactic,
mm-hmm.
and a full-on atrocious attack on the imbalance of the world in order to take over one city is fascinating. He wants it to have been successful, but he's like, that was never
the plan. It was not really a plan. It was always a distraction so I could get Omashu.
Yeah. It's just an interesting, it's interesting.
One of the things that I liked about this episode as well is Katara asking to fight, but mm-hmm. also it being a more community forward thing of,
yeah,
all of these women would like to support the same goal as you.
Yep.
Which is protecting their culture, livelihood, and families.
Well, and this was in direct response to a question of balance, right? Sokka, they're talking to, and Sokka's like, yeah, it's a 50-50 shot, 60-40. And then she's like, I'm going to even the odds, right? It's the perception of imbalance that led her to take this option, to move towards this as a, we need this or we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And it's the threat of such an imbalance that is what moves Paku, right? And so it's this, again, perception of balance and perception of we're, quote, going to lose without this, right?
Well, yeah, and it makes me think of this moment of, like, you have to recognize where imbalances exist mm-hmm. so that you can balance them, yeah. right? If you
can't correct what you don't know.
Correct. Yeah. And so, like, here's this moment, unfortunately, through the metaphor of war.
Yep.
Yeah. Of people recognizing there's an imbalance. There's a difference. There's a marginalized group.
Yep.
And this is how we want to show up to create a balanced world and community. And Paku listens. And so, but recognizing that there is an imbalance is a part of that. And it took Katara to say in the last episode, yeah, this is not helpful.
Yeah.
Here's where the imbalance is hurting us.
Yeah.
And helping other people see that.
Yeah.
So how do you recognize imbalance when you're in it? Like, how do you recognize whether it's your own home routine, whether it's work, whether it's the way you're showing up in your family, like, where, how do you recognize imbalance?
Well, this is really a fascinating question too, when you think about it from a bodily perspective, because, and even a systems perspective, because balance is what, like, homeostasis, to go back to this homeostasis, this, like, the homeostasis that the body is in is not always the healthiest, right?
Right.
It is just balanced because the body is going to take the things that you are giving it
and
regulate it to the best of its ability,
yep.
and try to find that balance. So if you are constantly in stress, the new balance point is going to be acclimated to that amount of cortisol in your system.
It is finding the new center of balance.
It is finding a system. And so it will then feel off balance to you to be less stressed. And your perception is that, something's wrong.
I'm not productive.
And that's capitalism. Welcome to capitalism 101, right? Capitalism is the enemy. But the same is true in, like, family systems, right? If you have a dad who is abusive and overwhelming and does this, and your mom is constantly trying to protect the children and doing that and mitigating that, and the kid is making jokes all the time to do X, Y, and Z.
To disassociate from that, yeah.
Any of one of those things shift, somebody's going to change to make up for it,
mm-hmm.
right? The balance is, we are in a system in which we are regulating based off. And so when you remove one of those elements, people always will try to revert it to the status quo. And so you start, you know, saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. And people will then overcompensate to try to get you to revert back to that, which is why anytime you start to make changes in your life,
set boundaries,
even when it's a good thing for you, people are going to be like, no, you can't do that. That's bad, because it is affecting my perception of balance. And so to your point from this earlier conversation, balance is not always a good thing. It's the correct balance. It's the right balance. It's how do we find good balance versus bad balance, right? Like, that's the question. But that's the problem too, because our bodies will trick us.
Yeah.
because it's doing its very best to survive. And we just have to kind of learn and cultivate awareness and grow and ask questions and seek feedback from those we trust. And that's how we figure things out. That was a rant.
No, it makes sense, because that's why change is hard, right? Whether it's a new workout routine, whether it's, you know, quote unquote, healthier eating, whatever that means to each individual and what they need to be fueled well. And but that's why it's tough, right? Because, all right, I'm in this space where this is happening. You know, for me, you know, we started youth programmings for summer stuff, and my typical hourly schedule has shifted, which means that the things like
getting up
my
earlier,
my workout routine and my eating habits have shifted with it.
Yep.
And I've already felt myself getting into the norm of I'll pick up something on the way.
Yep.
And I already hate it.
It's convenience.
Right.
Right.
But in this, like, but it feels like that's the best action in that moment. Because it's the easiest thing for me to do.
Like, and water, it is choosing the easiest path forward.
Oh, yep. And that's not what I want to be. Like, I don't want to be eating drive-through every morning for breakfast.
Yep.
I don't like it.
Yep.
But it's how do you recognize those things? They're like, oh, I'm doing this. This is becoming a habit because I've been doing it for 2 weeks. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do I need to change? Which is tough.
Mm.
Mm. But through this section of everyone, Katara kind of talking to Paku, what good is relying on the past when it stops us from having a future?
Mm.
Love that quote.
Great line.
Love the line. And there has to be balance even in that quote, because if you don't have historical context to things, if you don't have some of this, you're wasting potential resources to make the right decisions in the future. And so you have to find the balance between the future and the past. You can't completely be futuristic in your outlook, and you can't completely lean on what has always been done.
Yeah.
And I think this line kind of is, you have to add the lens of balance to that line for it to be successful.
Mm. Yeah. Balance is complex, is what I'm learning, right?
How do you have good balance? Oh, just be balanced.
Be better.
Be better.
Get good, bro.
Because that's always with half of our conversations, and not more than half through the years that we've done this show, a lot of it comes to awareness. It's personal.
It is
awareness, yes. And what that means for you. And that means taking the time to process things in a way that is meaningful.
Turns out.
Whether that's an hour long meditation on your back porch, or whether that's 10 minutes of no phone time when you first wake up so you can think about your day. Like, but there has to be some things, but it also means that you're taking in information from other, you know, input sectors. So you got to be like, and so it's tough.
Yeah.
How do I get better at this? Oh, you just be better.
Yeah. Legit.
Hopefully this show has given someone a tool somewhere.
Yeah. Maybe when one of these episodes has given you all a tool, right? That, you know, it's certainly given me one in terms of listening to this and being a part of it. But yeah, I mean, it's always coming down to this idea of how do I balance the internal stimuli with the external stimuli? And how do I recognize that my own morality and community morality, it's always in conversation with myself, with others, and with the world at large. Right?
Have you ever played that game? It's a relatively newer game. It's probably been around for 10 years, but it's the kind of the seesaw that you stack blocks on, like Tetris blocks on, and the goal is to keep it balanced the entire time.
I've seen a version of it. Yeah. I've never played it.
To your point of like your body will find balance.
Yep.
It makes me think of that game.
Mm.
Because like you're on turn one and it is currently balanced. But because of what you did on turn one, it is going to be really difficult to be balanced on turn five.
Yeah.
You're balanced now, but like 6 months from now, this is not sustainable.
Right? With all the other things you're trying to do.
Correct. Yeah. And so that's like all these conversations are kind of leading me back to that point. It's like, yeah, you can be balanced by doing this thing, but is that going to set you up for success?
Well, and is it more work? Does it take more energy to maintain balance in this position than it does in another?
Correct.
Right. And so, yeah, sure, you can maintain this for however long, but it's not efficient. It's not necessarily the best way. Right.
Standing single foot on a balance beam is balance.
Yeah.
But also standing 2 feet firmly on the ground is balanced.
Yeah.
And like, where do you want to be and what are you going to be able to do longer?
What feels better to you? All of those things matter. Oh, this is good. I was expecting a lot of our, you know, repeat shenanigans, but this felt new and nice and lovely.
Anything else you want to talk about in this episode? But, you know, any big UA?
UA.
There wasn't a lot there for me, I feel like. I feel like there wasn't a lot through all of this.
I like the opening scene where they were taking out that one ship. And, you know, they did a little bit of fighting. It's Katara, Aang. They're all doing their thing. Sokka sneaks onto the ship and jumping off of Appa. It's like, we took out that ship. There can't be that many more.
And then zoom out.
There's a whole fleet. I thought that was a really neat display of ability, display of what they're capable of. I thought that was a cool scene.
Yeah, and I think that's you juxtapose that to the animated show where Aang does all of that to take out one ship, and then I'm just a kid, I can't do all of this.
Right?
That moment hits so hard too. But I think here's an example of like the adaptation was made, and it worked, like because both served their purpose, and both were good. I prefer one over the other, and like. Again, we can do good adaptations.
Agreed.
And I think part of that worked because it wasn't only just one version of bending that you had to sit and watch a fight of. It was constantly cutting from Sokka doing things, Aang doing things, Katara doing things, them setting themselves up. Like, so it worked out well.
Yeah. And it just, again, it shows to Aang's point, like the group effort versus the single attempt from just the Avatar doing it all to... We're a team and we do things. Anyway, balance.
One other thing before we get to break. How did you feel about Zhao's demise?
You know, this was interesting. So, like, this is a moment. So, this goes back to this idea of Zuko getting revenge as the balance point for me.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, he has this moment where he can choose. Iroh's like, you don't need to do this. Like, this is not your, like... Don't worry about it. And Zuko's like, but he hit me. And you know, he goes in, fights, is about to lose. And then Iroh shoots him with fire over the like. And so I think it is way more satisfying to have this ocean koi spirit take him over the edge.
After he killed another spirit.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the...
I think that is way more
compelling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but so to your question, I'm like, meh. That's how I felt. I was like, meh.
Yeah, fair enough. All right.
It also undermines Zuko. Like, Iroh saving Zuko is like this. Like,
either the fight was between Zhao or Zuko, which it has been this entire season, so that would have made sense. Or it's between Zhao and the spirits.
Yep.
Because Zhao just murdered
which
the spirit.
Which would have made sense.
And neither of those are Iroh.
Yeah, yeah. So I just was like, that's a choice. Not the choice I probably would have gone with.
I do think I prefer to see him get swallowed up by a giant angler fish.
I just think that is more poetic, frankly.
No.
Right?
Huh.
Here we are.
We can talk about it in our Twi'en Law after the break. We'll be right back.
Okay, bye. All
right, and welcome back from our final break of this season and potentially series.
Yeah, it's potential. There's potential.
They say a second season's coming.
They say a second and third season's coming.
Which may happen.
We will probably be in very different life stages at that point.
Don't know what that will entail for us. Yep.
Yep.
And let's talk a little Twee and Law. What pushes you away and pulls you into this latest episode?
You know what I really liked? I thought this was a change from the original, and it's also just not even a change, an addition. And the idea, I guess it is a change. Kurok's knife being a signal to Kurok as a, hey, Aang, something's happening here, is one, that's super cool. Also, like, the origin of the knife and the, like, where it came from, like, I'm super intrigued by that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's an interesting storyline to, like, I want to learn more about that.
Agreed.
Which is cool. And then also, like, the idea of this, no, this just happens to be the ice moon, kind of like Sozin's comet. It's like, you know, the lore around Twee and Law not always being there, but they were only there for the night, is also interesting. Now, I do think it was a little convenient to only mention that once, and there was never...
And that there wasn't, like, a celebration that was typically, planned around the ice moon or something like that.
The fact that it was not mentioned to anyone but Zhao is a little off to me, but I do think the idea of it is really neat. And so I was intrigued, like, I think I'm intrigued by that in terms of, like, how do we incorporate that into, like, an Avatar Legends game? How do we incorporate these concepts and ideas around that?
Yeah,
those things are cool storytelling elements that I want to learn more about, and I wish that they were fleshed out better, but I'm glad that they were there. So I was pulled in by those ideas and those concepts, you know?
Yeah.
What about you?
I really enjoyed the Kurok knife thing as well. I enjoyed this episode as a whole. I just thought it looked a little bit better. Maybe it was the night that made it look a little bit better, but I think the set designs, the
landscaping is really
all
nice.
All the stuff looked a little less fake. The, you know, a lot of the battle sequences looked good, where I've not necessarily felt that way across the show.
Yeah. Easy to suspend belief around a giant koi fish, where instead of bending, generally speaking.
Right. And so that looked better. So I enjoyed that. I didn't love the Momo sequence.
It was interesting.
It was interesting, and I thought they were going to do it, and here's why. Because Momo has not been a major character at all.
People would have thrown
through this process. And I kind of was like, give us three episodes of of us being like, what happened to Momo. And again, they pull the thread on that, and I was like, this will be interesting if they do this.
Yeah.
And then within 5 seconds, oh, he's fine.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
It would have been nice at the, like, end of the battle, like, he's, like, twitching and awake. And
maybe, we don't know, but again, it's one of those things where you haven't given me a reason to care about this Momo.
Yeah, yeah.
Throughout this season. Like, we haven't spent a lot of time. He hasn't been in the periphery that much.
Yeah.
Just every now and then we've seen him.
Yep.
And so that was like,
yeah.
It was really just a way to kind of, let's get you to this oasis somehow.
Yeah.
And that was the way that they got there. As opposed to Aang having to, like...
Exactly. Like, meditate in the spirit world
and need a safe place to be. So...
And the fact that he did that not in the spirit oasis to find Kurok was an interesting choice, too. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, all of that was interesting, but...
So, that's probably my Twee and Law. Overall, I'd say Twee and Law with the show is, like, I think it's fine. I just don't know why... It's necessary.
Yeah, but why? Yeah.
Because I think the old show is still very relatable, and kids still enjoy the old show.
Yeah.
And we saw that in 2020 when it first came on to Netflix. And so, like, I don't know why. Like, that's still the preferred medium, I think. And
for sure.
So
yeah. I think my main push here is... Like, I don't know why I felt this way, but it felt a bit much that in the prior episode, Yogoto's like, no, women don't fight. And then Katara has convinced the entire, like, women's, like battalion to enlist. And I don't know. It felt, I don't know. It felt off to me.
I didn't share that feeling. I liked that moment. I liked the we moment.
Yeah, I think I like the we-ness of it, of like we are here
capable
and capable, and not just it's not just let me fight, it's let us.
Right.
So I like that, but I felt like we needed more of the convincing on screen for that to be believable.
Fair.
To me.
Well, let's jump into our devotion. We are at the element of air through the lens of balance. And y'all, I'm going to cheat. I'm not going to cheat, but
you're a cheaty cheater, McCheaterson.
What do you want out of this conversation, Ben?
I want you to tell me about an intention that you can achieve in the next week.
Yeah.
And that you feel is reflective of our conversation.
Yeah, great. I really, you know, for multiple reasons, it being a busier time in life, which is part of the reason we've had this show on pause for a little bit, and taking time to breathe is legitimately something I need to do.
Yep. Yep.
And it is something that I have not made time to do. And I say make time intentionally.
Pretty easy.
Because, like, I need to make time to stop and pause.
That's the hard part.
And because I'm very much guilty of, when I stop and pause, immediately picking up my phone to, like, doom scroll and zone out that way. Or jump on PlayStation and, like,
enter the void,
play a mindless game for a little bit that I don't have to, like, strategize and think about. Like, I lean into sports games for that because, like,
mindless,
typically pretty repetitive, you know, that type of thing. And so, but taking time to just think and sit, and ooh, I need to do a little bit more of that. And so that's that, legitimately, though we have joked about that as being a cop-out devotion over the last 5 years, I genuinely think that's what would be most helpful to me this week. So that's going to be my focus.
Yeah.
No, what about you?
I've been thinking about how I have to empty my dehumidifier 2 to 3 times a day. And it's working really hard to maintain a balanced humidity in my house. And it's, you know, this time of year, it is always like that because it's very humid out. It's in North Carolina where we are. It's humid. This house in particular
is older.
So it just, like, maintains moisture. And when that is not on, bad things happen. Like, it becomes a moist, dank situation, and I don't like that. And so I'm thinking about how it's working really hard right now, and there are times when I have to work harder to feel that kind of balance. And I am at a time in my life where I'm in transition, coming off of a very different time of my life where I was in full-time school for 4 years. I had jobs on top of school and internships, and I have been for over a month now only working about like 15 hours a week, and I'm getting to the point where I am having to work to do the things that I want to do in order to find that balance again of what feels good. And the balance that I have been in has been all recovery mode. And so I'm realizing that I need to, like, go outside more and stare less at screens and go to bed at a reasonable time. Like, all of the things that I cared about and forced myself to do when I was in school because I had to function, I haven't had to do. And so now I'm like, oh, those things they served a purpose, even though I resented them. And so now it's like, okay, I need to start doing those things again.
Yeah.
Except now I can be more intentional because I have a different schedule. I can allow for more flexibility, so it doesn't have to be as rigid. So moral of the story is I want to work to find a new balance that makes sense and feels good. That's my long story short.
I love it.
Thanks.
Find that balance.
That's right.
All of us, find that balance.
Breathe, dehumidify.
Let's finally talk gratitude.
Oh, my favorite.
Who are you thankful for?
My favorite. You know, we've talked about how this show didn't do great, not the live action specifically, but just generally speaking with women. And it's been really difficult to, you know, highlight things that I'm grateful for when it can be complex around like the women in the show and the decisions that they're making. So I've been grateful for Katara. I've been grateful for Yagoda, and that may not have been who I picked at the end of the episode, because either you picked Katara last episode or something along those lines. But because
I'm a better person than you. Yeah.
But I one of the things that I will appreciate right now is I'm a big fan of Aang's choice to support Katara in this, because being 14 and the only woman who is really taking point on like standing up for something that she believes to be right and good.
Mm-hmm.
So like Katara is a given, but Aang for like saying, hey, take it easy on Zuko. Right. And like believing in her so hard that like Zuko's like, I don't care about that anymore. He's like, I wasn't talking to you. Like, you know what I mean? That, that moment of sass comes from his deep support for Katara.
Mm-hmm.
And so like one, Katara for being just a badass all the way around and continuing to be that pivotal, you know, woman in this show, but also to Aang for believing in her and supporting her and doing that.
I love that.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm the one I'm rumbling with. I think I'm going to pick UA.
Bold.
But I think that I have a lot of debt that is owed to women who have sacrificed more than they should have to support community. And she makes an ultimate choice kind of in this episode, and it's a bummer that she has to.
Yep.
And so I'm just greatly in support of people who sacrifice for community.
Yeah.
And also have to acknowledge that we should strive to create communities where
that's not necessary.
That's not necessary.
Yeah.
And so I just have a whole lot of gratitude for her and the representation her character has.
Yeah.
For the women who have had to put so much on the line, whether that's been women in Pride or women who are people of color who just consistently have to sacrifice for the greater good.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole lot of debt and gratitude for those women, and then also hope for how and a drive to work to create spaces where that sacrifice isn't necessary.
Well said.
And so that's who I'm grateful for this episode.
Mm. Y'all, we did it. We
live action episodes in the book.
We made it through.
We'll see if there are more to come, and when they get here, we'll see where we're at. But
yep.
As always, you can still do live episodes with Ben via the Patreon for Bending Not Breaking.
And it is likely that the transition to the Dragon Pod will happen, because Dragon Prince, the 6th season, is dropping this July.
Exciting.
Yeah.
I think I got to go rewatch all of it.
It's so good.
I have forgotten so much of like the first 3 seasons at this point that I need rewatch all of it. But it is so good.
It's very good.
So that'll be an exciting thing to do.
Yep.
Well, y'all, thank you so much for having me back for this.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Continue to support. And thanks for all y'all have done as our audience over the years.
Yeah.
I'm Sunshine.
And I'm Ben.
And this has been Bending Not Breaking. And thank you so much for listening.
TTFN. Ta-ta for now.
Bye.